this guy is proven through trials and tribulation that he can handle a roster, he can handle a veteran leading team, and he's developing at the big league level. And my track record is I have fired managers in midseason. I have fired managers after season. I have fired coaches midseason. I fired coaches after the season. We're all being evaluated. You know, we all got to look ourselves in the mirror. We are at a point right now where we are moving forward with our development of these young kids. I think Davey still has the pulse of the clubhouse. He's a great clubhouse presence, and he's a calming presence. And I think that once we get through this thing and win a couple of games, which we will, that we can right the ship and continue progressing towards winning a championship, whenever that is.
Mike Rizzo, last month, after that long losing streak had reached 11 games, he was on with the Junkies on that particular morning, and he knew that his job and Davey Martinez's job, both of them, were in jeopardy. Good morning, everybody. Mike Rizzo is gone, and so is his manager, Davey Martinez, fired by the Learners yesterday. We'll have their statement and even Mike Rizzo's initial statement here in a minute or so. It's a shocker, I guess, that this happened. Not really, but it is a shocker that Nats ownership participated finally in the process of competing. Didn't even know they were paying attention. You know, whether the Learners made the right calls or not, time will tell on that one, I guess. But one thing is for sure, the firing of Mike Rizzo and the firing of Davey Martinez is the most interesting thing this organization has done in a while, and it garnered the most attention that this organization has had all season long. Mark Zuckerman is going to join us on the show in about 10 minutes. He covers the Nats, of course, for Masson. And then Chelsea Janes will jump on with us from the Washington Post at 11:30. So we're covered guest-wise. Mike Rizzo texted back to Barry Zwerluga of the Washington Post, quote, "The sun will come up tomorrow. That's the job. I had a great run, navigated that ownership group for almost 20 years. That tells you right there. As did his statement to the Junkies last month that, you know, this is about ownership as much as it is about anybody or anything else. The Nats organization, first of all, will install as the interim GM Mike DeBartolo. He'll take over. The actual manager will be announced today. The team is off after losing all three to the Red Sox at home over the weekend. They are in St. Louis tomorrow night. On behalf of our family in the Washington Nationals organization, I first and foremost want to thank Mike and Davey for their contributions to our franchise and our city. Nats managing principal owner Mark Learner uttered those words in a statement put out by the team yesterday. Our family is eternally grateful for their years of dedication to the organization, including their roles in bringing a World Series trophy to Washington, D.C. While we are appreciative of their past successes, the on-field performance has not been where we or our fans expect it to be. This is a pivotal time for our club, and we believe a fresh approach and a new energy is the best course of action for our team moving forward," closed quote. This was supposed to be a step forward in the rebuilding process, which is now going on 6 years. Nobody expected, certainly, that the Nats would contend for a playoff spot, but I think there were some people that thought this could be a step forward year to something close to 500, with maybe next year is the first year that they could compete for something, you know, on the periphery of playoff contention, a wild card spot. Davey Martinez has certainly struggled. There have been criticisms of the way he's handled the bullpen specifically this year. We know that Mike Rizzo, outstanding on trades, not so much through the draft, but Mike Rizzo has been one of the sharper guys in the sport when it's come to trading. We've seen multiple, attempts at sort of rebuilding the organization under, his leadership, including in 2022, the decision, which was certainly in its moment a controversial one, to trade Juan Soto, a trade that brought back current star and now, by the way, all-star, yes, James Wood, named to the National League reserves for the All-Star game as an outfielder. Also brought back, remember, C.J. Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, Robert Hassel III, and there's still a top prospect or two in the system, including pitcher Yarlin Susanna. But the team's, overall drafting and even attempts at free agency haven't worked, but there wasn't much support on the money spending front. And that's where we'll talk to Mark and to Chelsea. Tommy will jump on my podcast later on a day early, and we'll get his thoughts. But I think there's a lot of thought among those that truly report on the team that there's been some frustration in that the learners have been sort of between, do we continue to own this team or do we sell it? Do we have any buyers for it? Not at what we're asking. A state of flux when it's come to loosening up the purse strings and pursuing a free agent of note or two to help this team get over the top. Because certainly the trade in 22 brought back some talent, but it has not been enough. So Mike Rizzo, who certainly for the time period that he's been in this organization has been an absolute first-class guy, a true competitor. There had to be times for him over the last few years where he felt like he was fighting this battle all alone without any competitive push or participation from ownership. And Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo certainly instrumental in the magical moment of the fall of 2019, something that could have been followed up with better days, but something we've talked about many times in the past. The Nationals had probably the worst luck of any franchise during any of the four major professional sports franchises during the pandemic, because it was a franchise that desperately needed, that moment. It has been a cash cow to a certain degree, but not to the level of other major league teams. In its own market, it's never been number one or close to it necessarily. And winning the World Series and the opportunity that the World Series presented the Nats with was not, something they could take advantage of because of the pandemic. No ability to go out and add to the season ticket base, which would have been an exponential increase in the season ticket base, would have been an exponential increase in corporate sponsorships, and that would have lasted for years to come. But instead, we got the 60-game shortened season, couldn't even celebrate the World Series appropriately. And then the owners, whose primary business is real estate and commercial real estate, obviously that industry affected as much by the pandemic as anything else. And then it became, the last 5 years, this slog. Will they or won't they sell the team? Is there a buyer for this team? And a state of flux which did not allow for enough dry powder to arm Mike Rizzo with the ability to compete on a fair playing ground with especially the teams in the division, the Mets and the Phillies and the Braves. So anyway, Mark Zuckerman will join us in 5 minutes. We'll have Mark break down everything and what's next. Before we get to that, I want to get to a what do you got. So over the weekend, Jeremy Fowler, ESPN, on a subject that, continues to be top of mind for this time of year. Not today, because of the firings of Rizzo and Davey Martinez. But ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported over the weekend that Terry McLaurin is, quote, not happy with where things are with an extension. Fowler continued and said they've got a couple of weeks here to make progress before risking Terry McLaurin holding out to start training camp. This is not a major update on the last updates and the last reporting, whether it was Ian Rappaport or Adam Schefter or anybody else, but it's just the newest of updates on Terry McLaurin not happy with where things are with an extension. It's getting repetitive, but we've got a couple of weeks before training camp. The Adam Peters previous organization's history was to let these things, you know, kind of play out over an extended period of time and approach them when they get to that bewitching hour or that, you know, last hour before training camp begins. And unlike what happened in 2022, when Terry was locked up by the end of June on his extension, this may not happen until right before training camp begins. Rookies, veterans report on the 22nd of July. So we are still 15 days away from that. Plenty of time. I wouldn't be concerned and I wouldn't be alarmed at all unless you start hearing things like, and even then, to me, it would be posturing. If you hear from Terry's camp, we're seeking a trade. We would like Washington to give us permission to seek a trade. And even then, it would seem like posturing. I think Washington gets it done with Terry McLaurin before the deadline. This has always been a tricky extension because of his age and because of where he really is in the hierarchy of wide receivers and based on the current average annual pay scales. Just because the Steelers perhaps overpaid DK Metcalf by a bit doesn't mean Washington needs to do the same thing. I want Washington to keep Terry McLaurin. I want them to certainly invest in what is to come, not reward for what has already been done. But at the same time, recognize that Terry McLaurin is a bit of a tone setter for the franchise, and not getting it done or creating the perception that you are lowballing or not taking care of one of your best players, not only on the field, but off of it, could have lasting repercussions. So you got to get it done, but not at the expense of creating a precedent of we're okay paying our star players, you know, 10 to 15 to 20% above retail. That's what the last organization did, and it never worked out, at least in the first 10 years of Snyder. All right, when we come back, Mark Zuckerman from Masson will jump on with us, and we'll talk about Rizzo, Davey Martinez, and what's next. Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980. All right, joining us right now, as promised, Mark Zuckerman, who's been covering this team for a long period of time, a big part of Mike Rizzo's tenure for sure, and Davey Martinez's entire tenure. Mark can be followed on X on Twitter at Mark Zuckerman. He follows and covers and reports on the team for Masson Sports and also has a Nats Chat podcast, which you can find anywhere you get a podcast with our good friend Al Galdi. So, first question is, this seemed like it was a possibility a few weeks ago during the 11-game losing streak. Why now?
You know, I think that we know you've followed the Learners long enough to know that they don't really make spur-of-the-moment decisions. They drag things out. So my guess is that the process probably started back then, and they didn't go through with it at the time, but probably had it on their mind and wanted to see how these next few weeks went. They played better on the road trip, and they actually just won 2 out of 3 against the Tigers, a very good team. And then the Red Sox series this weekend, first two games, they get blown out. And I feel pretty comfortable saying they probably had made the decision before yesterday's game. I don't think it was a reaction to the loss yesterday. I think they just got to a point that said, this hasn't been good enough. And, you know, both Martinez and Rizzo had contract options that had to be picked up at some point this month. They probably had come to the conclusion that they weren't going to do that. So are you going to go through the rest of the season with them as lame ducks? Or are you going to go ahead and make the move now? I kind of thought it wouldn't happen until the end of the year. Maybe around the All-Star break if you want to make a managerial change. I really didn't think they would make a GM change in the middle of the season. But they probably just reached a point that they said, we think we're going to be making some pretty big changes anyways. Let's go ahead and do it now.
Is the timing, Mark, hurtful because the draft is in a week, helpful, or is it benign?
You know, I don't know that it matters as much as the initial reaction, of course, is like, oh my God, they just fired their GM a week before they have the number one pick in the draft. And this is not just any GM, but a guy whose background is all in scouting and, you know, had been a huge part of the evaluation process there. But having said that, number one, my guess is they've already had the discussions and are pretty sure who they're going to pick anyways. So I don't know that it changes a lot there. The scouting, you know, department is still intact, and those are the guys who are going to make the call. I don't know that Mike DiBartolo, who takes over as interim GM, is going to get in their way and try to say he thinks they should take somebody else than they would want. So I don't know that it makes a huge difference in that regard. And then there's maybe something to be said for this. One of the reasons Mike Rizzo is not employed today is when you look back at their last decade, really even more than a decade, of drafting, they have not done a good enough job of developing good quality big leaguers. You know, forget about even star players, but just good quality big league players. The last homegrown draft pick who has gone on to give them at least four career WAR for the Nationals, and that's not a very low number. Four WAR is not much. That's like one good season. The last one to do that is Anthony Rendon in 2011. So if one of your reasons for changing the GM is to say that you haven't done a good enough drafting and good enough job drafting and developing, then do you want him being the one making the call this week for a very important decision on the number one pick? So I think there's maybe something to be said for that as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, but when you said that you think maybe the decisions have been made already, so it's not that impactful, is it possible that they actually want in this final week somebody to get in and make better decisions and didn't want him to have the final call?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that is the reason for it. You know, I think this is more about the performance on the field and the overall state of things. But yeah, there's maybe a little symbolism in there to suggest that they want this next pick, and it's a big one, they want the people who are going to be here in the future being the ones who make that call. And again, it may be that whoever they decide to pick, and my guess is it's Ethan Holliday, the high schooler from Oklahoma and brother of Jackson Holliday and son of Matt Holliday.
Right.
My guess would be that they were all already in agreement on that anyway, so it may not have made a big difference. Or even if they hadn't really sat down and decided who it was going to be, they may have had consent, you know, ultimately had consensus on it anyway. So I don't know that it changes that much. But I think there's some symbolism, for sure, in the idea of saying, we don't want to have the person who we think we're going to be letting go anyways be the one making that call, or at least speaking for the organization on that draft pick.
All right. Before we get to the reason it hasn't been good enough and sort of, you know, parsing out some of the blame and a blame pie, if you will, I want you to just, because we've talked about him many, many times over the years, and there have been moments in which you have said and others have said Mike Rizzo is among the best general managers and maybe among the most underrated or under, you know, sort of unheralded general managers in the game. Where has he been on the list of general managers in, well, I mean, we could say the last six seasons since the World Series, which has been a disaster, but just recently here over the last two or three years, and maybe going back to the trade of Soto.
Clearly, that was a huge success for him and a move that nobody ever wanted to have to make. But if you were going to take that huge leap, you cannot ask to get a better return than they got. You've now got three of the five prospects they got back have now been All-Stars, two of them just named yesterday. By the way, Juan Soto, not an All-Star this year. James Wood, Mackenzie Gore are. A little bit of symbolism there as well. Yeah. So certainly that part of it. His trade record is as good as anybody you're ever going to find. Trey Turner, Doug Pfister, I'm losing track of all the names over the years. I mean, he did a tremendous job on trades. Now, more recently, as the rebuild began, obviously he was not given the financial resources that he used to have when the team was contending every year. And that's a huge hindrance. But the money that he was given, especially this past winter, when it felt like there was some pressure to put a better product on the field, to turn that corner and say,
right,
maybe we're not ready to contend yet, but we're going to be a better team that can compete and challenge a 500 record. The money that he was given, he spent it on Trevor Williams, Michael Soroka, Josh Bell, Jorge Lopez, Lucas Sims, Colin Poche, Shinosuke Ogasawara, who made his debut yesterday and was down 4-0, five batters in. Now, that's not a huge layout for any of those guys, but the funding that he was allowed to spend, he didn't spend it wisely. And I think you have to point to that, of course. The drafting and developing, I do think it's gotten better in more recent years, and they made changes to their scouting department. So that's the kind of thing that takes years till you really know how it's worked out. But as I told you, they haven't had any success there over a long period of time. And that was obviously a big problem.
Talking to Mark Zuckerman from Masson, what about Davey Martinez? Was he a good manager the last few years or not?
I think he tried to do the best he could with what he was given. And again, he's hamstrung with a roster that was not up to what it should have been. And I don't think Dusty Baker or Davey Johnson or Frank Robinson or anyone else you could have put to the job was going to turn this roster into a winning team. Now, that said, could they have played a better brand of baseball? Absolutely. Defense has been an issue for several years now, and you've seen it not get better. Base running has been a huge issue for several years, not getting better. Situational hitting, particularly from a handful of guys who would come up in spots where they needed to have a good approach at the plate, and it did not appear that they could do that. That's a problem. And so while there's only so much that a manager can do, and I think when we spoke last time, I said, you know, his whole line about it's not on the coaches, it's always on the players, there is some truth to that. By the same token, a manager and a coach and a coaching staff, their job is to get the most out of their players to help make them better players. And in a lot of the cases, they have not become better. So I think there's fair criticism to give there as well. This team wasn't ready to win yet, no, but I think the messaging probably got a little stale over time, and the lack of improvement from players as they started to have more experience at this level, I think was pretty telling.
They both got fired yesterday. Was there a scenario in which Mike Rizzo stays if he doesn't decide to go down with the ship, so to speak, with the guy that he hired in Davey Martinez? Was that part of why he also got let go? Or was this just, you know, a combined decision that the Lerners made? They're both out.
You know, I don't have the detail on that one yet. I know there's some speculation out there about, was Rizzo refusing to fire his manager, and then that led to his being fired as well. I don't know if that's true or not. My hunch is that it's more of a combined decision. And as I said, you had both of them who had contract options that had to be picked up here this month. And so if you're ownership, it's a hard sell to try to say that either of them should have been picked up right now. Now, I believe you could have said, we're going to wait till the end of the year and then evaluate where things are at and then make our decisions. But once they decided, no, we're not picking up the options, I could also understand why they would say, it's time to move on now. Let's start that whole process and not wait until October to do that. So I think it's a joint package. I felt all along that a managerial change was more likely in season and a GM change is more likely after the season. But if you've already made the call and in your own mind you know that you're ready to do something different, I guess go ahead and do it now.
Barry's Verluga got a text message from Mike that read, quote, "The sun will come up tomorrow. That's the job. I had a great run. navigated that ownership group for almost 20 years, closed quote. Is it common knowledge around the sport that navigating the learner's ownership is not the easiest thing to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anybody was really surprised by that. But what I'll tell you is that when Rizzo finally texted me back early this morning, he sent me the exact same thing, except the last line was changed to proud of what we did here. So yeah. I think he finally realized, all right, I got that one off my chest. I'm going to, you know, try to take the high road now beyond that. But yeah, I think everybody locally and all around the baseball world understands how difficult it is to work for the Lerner family. And it's probably true of a lot of ownership groups out there. That's always going to be something you have to navigate. This one may be even more difficult than others because of their process for doing things, how slow they are, how it's a larger group of people deciding. It's not just one person deciding right. things. Now, I will say this. Mike Rizzo, and you know him, can butt heads with anybody. He also can be fiercely loyal and appreciative of everybody that he works with. And I, you know, because I've seen it. Managers that he's fired over the years, players he's let go, when he sees them again years later, when they reconnect, there's always a big hug. They reminisce about good times. I think he thinks of this like family. You have your good moments, your bad moments, but you love each other in the end. I am sure that whenever it is down the road that he crosses paths with members of the Lerner family again, they're going to remember good things. This isn't like a, you know, they were always at each other's throats and now he's finally like airing his dirty laundry. It's nothing like that. It's heat of the moment, upset about being fired, but I think he genuinely appreciates the opportunities that they gave him, and in the long run, we'll remember a lot more of the good things they did together than, you know, how it ended.
I mean, I asked that question in part. I mean, we all understand that locally, but getting a feel for what everybody around the league thinks, because I wonder if Rizzo gets hired because people, like they did with our football franchise for many, many years, said, well, I mean, that place is just different from, you can't get it done there with that ownership group. Will they view Rizzo that way? Will he get a job?
I think they will certainly view that aspect of it for sure. Now, I think the thing that's going to be challenging for him is, number one, he's 64 years old.
Right.
And number two is that his approach to being a GM is an old school approach that is not very common in Major League Baseball today. Now, there are still some others out there, and maybe there'd be some owners and organizations that believe that that's the way to run. But for the most part, when you're hiring a GM these days, you're hiring a young guy, often not from a scouting background, but from a business background, an Ivy League type who is all into analytics. That's not who Mike Rizzo is. Now, he made a lot of strides over the years in this stuff and probably deserves more credit than he got for his views on those kind of things. But that will be a little bit of a tough sell, and you're going to have to find the right owner and the right team that is willing to go with more of that old school approach with him if he has to get another GM job.
We're talking to Mark Zuckerman. You said at the very beginning in one of your answers, the bottom line is it hasn't been good enough. And so my question is, why hasn't it been good enough from, you know, using three buckets, the manager, the general manager, and ownership? How would you, you know, sort of slice up the blame pie from post 2019? You and I have talked a lot about, you know, the Nats really getting a tough break with the pandemic. And a lot of that may have been, you know, responsible for the lack of success in 2020 and 2021, you know, and the lack of, you know, what they would have had in new revenue, you know, being able to celebrate that in a normal way. But why hasn't it been good enough? Sort of give me the, you know, the reasons why pie chart. Ownership, general manager, manager.
Well, I think they're all included in it. I don't think anybody is not to blame. But
you've made that clear with Rizzo's, you know, just drafting and developing, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. But I think ownership is probably the largest slice. I don't know that it's the full 50%, but it's the largest slice, followed by the GM and probably followed by the manager after that. From an ownership standpoint, yes, they are not in the same financial position that they used to be, and there are reasons that were out of their control that happened. However, I think most people understood that when you're going to tear down a roster and you're going to rebuild, start over, you're not going to be investing in the team at the major league level for a few years. Okay. But once they did start to bring up these prospects and had some genuine, like, optimism, I think, going into this past offseason, that felt like the time, not just to me, to almost everybody in the organization, to say, okay, it's time to start to reinvest now in the product and to supplement the young talent we have with legitimate veteran talent. Maybe you don't have to go all in like you did, you know, when they were competing for the World Series, but you need to give them more resources to do these things, as well as just all the other stuff that goes on in an organization, not just Major League payroll, but all the other, you know, areas of this. And they have not done that yet. Now, maybe they believe that their long-term approach needs to be more like the Tampa Bay Rays. That's a discouraging thought for a lot of people, if that's what it's going to be. But they have not acted like the kind of bigger market club that we think they probably should be. And that was difficult for everyone. Now, on the GM side, yes, better drafting, better developing, better uses of the finances that you were given to sign players. And on the manager side, yeah, better job of getting the most out of your players. I mean, Davey is a tremendous communicator, tremendous leader. He's a genuinely good human being in so many ways, and that's going to be hard to replace. But there are things that the next manager can be better at, and coaching staff, not just manager, at working on those little details, making players better, getting the most out of them. And I think that's a challenge for everyone. They all have to be better, and the entire organization, they all have to be better if this thing is actually going to turn around.
It always starts at the top, though. So do you think it will improve? And let me take a step back. How much has the will we or won't we be able to sell the team, you know, sort of state of flux impacted the last couple of years in particular?
Well, I think that's been the most frustrating thing for everyone is, what is the plan? You know, they have said publicly that they're not looking to sell the team anymore. And okay, that's fine. But then you need to show everyone with your actions that that is actually true, and that you're not just sitting around waiting in case Ted Leonsis or somebody else does come through with the offer that you're looking for. And if really the goal for them, whether it's to keep owning the team and try to win again, or if it's to raise the value of the franchise so that they can ultimately sell it, well, you've got to spend money to make money. You know, if you're not getting, say, $2.5 billion right now being offered to you, how are you going to get there? You have to have a better product on the field. And the only way to do that is to invest in it. And so I think that's really where they're at a crossroads. And so many people over the last few years have been sitting around saying, what is the plan? Are you in? Are you out?
Right.
And not just with your words, but show us with your actions. Whatever it is, either way, people will accept what that is. But they've kind of been stuck in the middle here. It felt like they were stuck in the mud, not doing anything. Maybe these moves are a sign they are ready to do something, but they've got a lot to prove, I think, to a lot of people now.
Yeah, because that will obviously impact what's next, right? Like, is this an attractive job working for the learners for the next general manager or general manager candidates? Will they view Washington's availability and opening to be attractive enough?
If I'm interviewing for the GM job in the coming months, I have a lot of questions for the people I'm interviewing with. And I need to know, what is your vision? What is your short-term plan? What is your long-term plan? What kind of resources am I going to get? Are you in this for the long haul? And the Lerner family had better have good answers ready to go. Whatever they are, they better be prepared for that, because this should be an attractive job. There should be some very qualified, whether up-and-coming or even experienced baseball executives who would see the talent that's already in place, the potential for the organization, and want the job. But you have to know going in what you're getting into, and I think those are some huge questions that the ownership family has to be able to address in a satisfactory way.
Yeah, and I wonder, Mark, and I'm asking you this, are they connected enough, are they self-aware enough to know that this job, they're going to be interviewed as much as they're going to be interviewing the candidate, and how they'll deal with that?
I hope they know that. It's a great question, though, and here's something to keep in mind. They've never actually hired a GM. You know, they inherited
Right, because he was on Bowden's staff.
Yeah, and they hired Rizzo, but Stan Kasten was really in charge of the day-to-day right. operations back then. He had a lot of experience. Hired Rizzo. You know, Stan really led the search for the permanent GM, and they ultimately decided to retain Rizzo and elevate him to that job. But the ownership family really has never had to go through this. And so this is uncharted waters, and you hope over nearly two decades of owning the team that they've learned some things about how to do this, but we don't really know. And I think it's a fascinating question of how they will approach this and how confident is everyone in their decision-making abilities. This is the most important hire they will have ever made in so many ways. And they're doing it at a time when there's a lot of increased pressure and scrutiny than maybe there was, you know, two decades ago when this whole thing was starting up.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. You know, while their major businesses have taken a hit in the last several years, they are still among the top two, three, four, five wealthiest owners in baseball, correct? In terms of...
Yeah, I think personal wealth, yes, yes. I mean, there's debate over how successful financially the franchise is, right, and whether they're turning a profit or not, and we'll never know the answer to that. But, you know, there are other things going on right now that you would think should put them in a better financial position. They just finally sold their jersey patch. There's been talk of them selling stadium naming rights at some point, and we know the Masson deal at the end of the year, they have the right to now negotiate for the first time ever a TV deal. So there should be revenue coming in, and everybody wants to know, how are you going to apply that to what we actually see as a product on the field?
You know, this part of our conversation applies to players, too, in the coming years, you know, and how they view the organization. And ownership's going to have to put ego a little bit to the side until they prove, as you said, that they're not operating like a smaller market team.
100%. And, you know, I mean, we've got a ways to go until they get there. But James Wood, Mackenzie Gore, C.J. Abrams, do you want to sign them? Do you want them to want to
right.
play here? Do you... If you do decide, yes, we're going back in on spending on free agents, well, you've now got to convince guys that they want to come here again. It was a very attractive place from 2012 to 2019, and you had some top free agents want to come here, but we're kind of back where they were prior to all that, when they had to overpay Jason Worth to come here. And so, yeah, there's a lot of selling that needs to be done to a lot of people on why the Washington Nationals are a place you want to come to and why you believe this franchise can get back to being the large market successful franchise that it was for 8 years. It's a very different look right now. And I think the fear that a lot of people would have is that they may never get back to that. They may try to operate this like the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Tampa Bay Rays. And not that you can't have some success doing that, but it's a very different animal and a very different approach than they've done in the past.
Yeah, the other part too, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, is that they have paid players in the past. I mean, it started with Worth, but eventually there were, you know, players like Max Scherzer, you know, and others that they paid. But they've never paid, at least in the initial contract eras of Mike Rizzo, even the follow-up contract negotiations and managers, they've never paid GMs and managers anywhere near the top of the market, right?
Not at the outset. And I do think this is interesting,
yeah,
too. You know, Davey Martinez had several extensions over the years, and so he built himself up to being one of the higher-paid managers in baseball. And for Rizzo, was one of the highest-paid executives. Now, do you go into this process and say, we're willing to spend what we were spending on these guys, on the new GM and new manager? If so, you're talking about a very different kind of pool of candidates than if you're saying, we're going to go into this and look for first-timers who we can – you know, bring in on lower end deals, and maybe someday they work their way up to more than that, but we're going to start at the bottom. That's a fascinating question that we have to see how they're going to approach that.
All right, two more and we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much for doing this. Your memory of all of these years, can you point to a major disagreement over a player or a manager between Rizzo and the Lerners at any point? Were there ever knockdown dragouts over players?
Over players, maybe less so. I'm sure there were free agents that Mike Rizzo wanted to sign. You know, I'm sure he wanted more money to try to re-sign Bryce Harper and Juan Soto and not have to offer deferrals and those kinds of things. I think probably more so on the managerial front. I mean, Mike Rizzo wanted to retain Dusty Baker. That was not his decision to let him go. that was a big back and forth between them that ultimately ownership won out on, and other managers that they had to deal with in the past as well. I do think that there were a lot of times over there. I mean, Mike would even joke at times about how, you know, how many times he threatened to quit if ownership didn't let him do X or Y or whatever it was. And in some cases they went ahead and let him do it in the end, and he was able to convince them. And sometimes they weren't, and he never did quit on them. So there were there was plenty of butting of heads over the years over those things. But I think he also understood and respected the hierarchy there. And ultimately, they own the team, and they get to make the decision. He is a strong-willed, very opinionated man, and he's going to give his voice to it and tell them what he thinks should be done. But ultimately, he had to, you know, adhere to whatever they told him was going to be the case. I mean, he had to be the public voice of this team for a very long time. Yeah. And take a lot of bullets on their behalf that maybe he didn't deserve. But that was part of the job, and I think he understood that was the assignment.
Wasn't Bud Black a big disagreement?
Yeah, so that was, they had decided on Bud Black as the manager to replace Matt Williams, and had told Black that you're our guy, and that all started leaking out that he was the choice, and that all happened before they'd actually negotiated a contract. The Learners offered Bud Black one guaranteed year with an option, and he said, hang on a second, I'm an experienced manager. I don't take an offer like that. And so he backed away from it, and that's how they wound up with Dusty Baker instead, who did get a good deal, maybe because they were embarrassed at how that all went down. But, yeah, it was a good sign of the negotiating process and how ownership could step in and say, okay, yes, we know who you want to hire as your manager. Now we'll take care of the contract stuff. And, no, actually, that blew up on them.
All right, what's next? Give me your prediction.
Well, we're going to find out today who the interim manager is. My guess is it's just an in-house, you know, either the bench coach, Miguel Cairo, who's kind of one of Davey's guys, so it would be a little strange for that to be the case. Maybe it's the AAA manager, Matt Lecroy, or Randy Knorr, who's worked in the organization for a very long time and is well-respected. Mike DiBartolo is going to be the interim GM the rest of the year. Really what this is now kind of a lame duck session for the rest of the year. Now, there are things they can try to do to set themselves up, and maybe whoever has those jobs can do a good enough job to earn them on a full-time basis. But really, I think now we're looking ahead to the offseason and how dramatic of changes is going to be. Do they go clean house fully? You know, everybody in the front office is a Mike Rizzo guy. Everybody on the coaching staff is a Davey Martinez guy. Are you starting all over in all of those, or are you trying to maintain some kind of continuity? I think that's the biggest question now over the next few months.
Five playoff appearances over an 8-year period where I think they won more games than any team in the bigs except for the Dodgers. That seems like so long ago now.
It does, unfortunately. It was a great run, no doubt. It culminated with a World Series. And I think when it's all said and done, the dust settles, that's what we're going to remember more than how this all ended.
I agree with that. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. I know you're busy today. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerman, everybody. Follow him on X on Twitter, at Mark Zuckerman. He and Galdi do a podcast called the Nats Chat Podcast. I'm sure they've got a new episode out, so go listen to that. Chelsea Janes from The Post will join us at 11:30. We'll get her perspective on all of this. We'll open up phone lines now at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Your thoughts on this? Are you okay with Rizzo and Davey Martinez getting fired at this point in the season, a week before the draft? Who do you blame for this debacle of the last several years? Phone lines open for Nats calls on the day after the longtime general manager since 2009. Mike Rizzo has been the general manager 16 seasons, along with the World Series winning manager Davey Martinez, fired both of them yesterday. Phone lines open, 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. You can also watch us. We're streaming on the Team 980 YouTube page.
All right, little bit of breaking news. Oh. All right, a little bit of breaking news on the NBA trade front. The Clippers, Jazz, and the Miami Heat have agreed to a trade that sends Norm Powell to Miami, John Collins to Los Angeles, and Kevin Love, Kyle Anderson, and a 2027 Clippers second-round pick to Utah. The Nats, last night, they were swept by the Red Sox yesterday, and Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez have both been fired by the Lerner family. A new manager will be announced today. Mike DiBartolo will take over as interim GM. Some positive news for the Nats that Mackenzie Gore and James Wood were both named to the All-Star team for the first time in their careers. They will be on the reserves, and the U.S. men's national team falls to Mexico in the Gold Cup final by a score of 2-1. Edson Alvarez with the header to put Mexico in the lead and lift them to their 10th Gold Cup victory. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
All right, your reaction to Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez getting fired yesterday. Who do you blame for the last several years, 6 years since 2019? Really does seem like a distant memory. 93-69, rallying in the wild card game to beat the Brewers. And we know what happened next in that epic five-game series against the Dodgers before handling the Cardinals and then rallying from 3-2 down in the World Series to win the first since 1925 here in D.C. But since then, shortened season, 26-34, pandemic summer of 2020, 65-97 in 21, 55 wins in 22. Last 2 years, 71 wins, and right now they are 16 games under 500 and headed for the worst record that they've had in the last two seasons, with some exciting players, Mackenzie Gore and James Wood, both heading to the All-Star game. But you wonder, and I think a key part of the conversation with Zook, and we'll do it with Chelsea James as well at 11:30, is how is this franchise viewed around the big leagues? Are they viewed as an ownership group that operates in a very, you know, small to mid-market way? Can you attract a really good general manager? What happens when men of incredible means and perhaps large egos are interviewed as much as they're doing the interviewing, especially if they're interviewing high-quality candidates with choices? We shall see. But your reaction to the two firings, and, you know, who do you blame for the last 6 years? Let's start with Anthony in Northeast. Anthony, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? This is Anthony. I'm your buddy from Twitter.
Yeah, Anthony, what's going on, man?
Hey, it's been a minute, man. This is wild, man. Two things, though. I believe its ownership has a lot to do with what's going on. But I also believe this mess with the networks, the Madsen thing, dealing with Baltimore, if everybody, you know, want to, you know, claim, you know, DMV, this should give a good reason for everybody to keep Baltimore out of the DMV because they're not DMV.
Nobody that knows what the DMV is ever, we all understand Baltimore is not part of the DMV. That's for people outside of this market.
Exactly. But, you know, they like to equate the two as the same, you know, so yeah. I hate it. But
well, Baltimore doesn't want it either. They understand they're not a part of the DMV.
Okay. It's the outsiders who keep doing that stuff. So anyway, I remember when we used to have home, you know, town, you know, home team network. We need something like that back here because they don't know how many people that they have lost by, you know, not having their own network. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, you look at the Wizards and stuff like that. You know, they go to Monument Sports and stuff like that. And, you know, they got a nice little group and a little core fan base right there. The Nationals don't have nothing like that because they're dealing with Madsen.
Yeah, well, this long-running dispute did get resolved finally, remember, in the spring. I forget when it was exactly, but it was resolved a few months ago. But
hopefully,
yeah, look, they spent money.
They
spent money even when they weren't necessarily collecting what they thought to be, you know, something equating their you know, input. They still were spending money. I mean, they spent money on players. They did during that one stretch. The last few years, it's been operated in a state of flux, whether that was because of ownership, whether or not it was because of their core business that suffered very much post-pandemic. Whatever it was, you know, Zook hit the nail on the head. It the perception is it's a mid to smaller market sized operation, and it's not. You've got, you know, they were drawing $2.5 to $3 million a year there for a few years.
Well, let me ask you this, Kevin. How much damage did them, like, you know, saying they were going to sell the team and then pull back from selling the team? How much damage did that do?
Yeah, I think it's the whole kind of, are they or aren't they? You know, they clearly wanted to, but they didn't get their number. And, you know, that's a whole other conversation. Anthony, thanks for the call, as always. That's a whole other conversation because the guy, certainly who was interested, and he mentioned this to me when he was on with us not that long ago, you know, he was certainly, Ted was interested in purchasing the Nats. As was the new owner of the Orioles interested at one point in the Nationals. But they aren't going to sell for, you know, that much less, if anything less than what they were asking. I don't know where they are. They say they're not selling, and yet they're not spending. We shall see what happens here, because this is going to create the opportunity for kind of a litmus test on, are they going to become kind of aggressive spending owners, as if they're going to own the team moving forward, by going after, you know, and paying real money to a high quality GM and a high quality managerial candidate. I see everybody on hold. Stay there. We've got a segment before Chelsea comes on at 11:30. So Ian, Aveen, JYD, Lou, stay on hold. We've got an open line if you want to jump on. Your reaction to the Nationals, the Learners firing Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez yesterday. Who do you blame for really all of this? The last 3 years in particular, and this season, which has not gone the way I think they were expecting it to go. Not that it was going to be a playoff season, but it was going to be a step forward season in this current rebuild. Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. You're listening to The Kevin Sheehan Show.